Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Meyer was mostly paying attention to the rush hour traffic, but she couldn't help overhearing the chatter of her 11-year-old daughter and her pals in the back seat. "So what are you wearing to Tina's party?" "I'm going to have to get something new or I'm going to end up looking like Karen," wailed Marla. "Ooh," a chorus of giggles from all the girls. "Gross." "Now that girl's face would stop traffic." "Well, that's because she looks like a truck." "A truck, more like a cow, if you know what I mean." Another round of giggles. "Well, at least she won't be at Carly's," Myra's daughter Penny reminded the group. "No one would be seen dead with her. I even had to move to a different table today when she came to my table in the lunchroom." "Ooh," came the group's response. Myra couldn't take another minute. She pulled into the gymnastics center parking lot and turned to face the girls. "I don't care if you're late to gymnastics. No one may leave this car until we talk," she began. "Now, I don't know your classmate, Karen, but I do know how I would feel if you were talking about me like that." Silence. "I want each of you just to sit and think about how you'd feel if all of these mean comments were about you." Then she looked at her own daughter. "And to think," she said deliberately, "that you would go out of your way to isolate and hurt someone else is so painful to me I can't describe it." The girls hung their heads. "All right, you can go now." Myra released them reluctantly. "Well," Penny said to Jen under her breath, "Karen really does remind me of a cow." More giggles as the girls piled out of the car. From a parent's perspective, what should we do if our own child is the bully? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has much experience dealing with bullies and the bullied. Dr. Stanley A. Fagan is a clinical child psychologist with a background in psychology in the schools. He has concentrated on social skills therapy groups for children from elementary school ages to early high school. He has 3 grown daughters and 8 grandchildren. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Fagan.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me back.
We're all concerned about bullying behavior, but a number of studies have noted that it's even prevalent among apes and other primates. Are we humans stuck with this trait?
That's a good question. Bullying is a type of aggression. It's a hostile aggression where the bullier is trying to injure or hurt the person that they're bullying. And they're doing it over a period of time. And there's not a fair relationship because the bully has more power than the, in this case, we'll say victim. Aggression is something we have. We know that's a normal drive. Animals and people have it. We use it sometimes necessarily, like at war. So we use aggression when we're threatened. And then we use aggression sometimes because it accomplishes goals. So we say, you know, we have an aggressive team. You guys got to play harder. We expect you to get out there and be aggressive. And we don't worry about that so much. But when aggression becomes intentional hurting, designed to physically or psychologically or socially injure and damage another person, we see it as bullying. And I don't think we're stuck with that.
We talk about the bully, but I'm wondering whether we also should talk about the scapegoat or the victim. Is there some kind of personality or behavior, something, you know, sometimes people say, oh, the victim's asking for it. Is that something we should be aware of?
We should be aware of it. I wouldn't say that anybody really asks for it, but there is some, quote, victims that are annoying or provocative. They do things that incite other people's anger and displeasure.
Is that on purpose or by accident or subconsciously or a combination?
Well, that's interesting. It's not on purpose to be rejected, but in some cases, it's their nature to be critical or point out flaws or do things that upset other people or distinguish themselves from the situation. Kids that need attention and recognition haven't been able to find it in acceptable ways, often can be annoying, maybe obnoxious. They want importance. They haven't found it in an effective way, and they do things to set themselves off, and they draw negative attention. So other people don't like that, and they pick on them for doing it. I've had a lot of kids like that. It's sort of intriguing when it happens, and sometimes that's their identity. Sometimes with kids, when I work with them, I'll ask them to put on a coat of arms, things that they're good at and things that they're not good at. Some of them will say they're good at being annoying, or they're good at being bad. Those are difficult children to work with because they're, in some ways, they've gotten to the point where they see themselves as successful at this. But more commonly, our victims are weak and sort of helpless and timid, and they're often smaller. They're not as successful. They may not fit in. And when they don't fit in, then they're easy targets. Now, that girl you were talking about, that Karen, she was unattractive, and that set off the kid. She didn't wear clothes the same as the others. She was an easy target. So the peers, pointed out that in some ways this one didn't fit, but they did. They fit well together, and they could talk with a lot of confidence and ease and assuredness about themselves and point out the one that didn't. And that's the typical victim.
So there you go. You're talking about the group, the role of the peers in this whole dynamic. Is that a really common occurrence?
It's a very common occurrence. It's a powerful occurrence. What that mom did was terrific when she took the kids out and said, I don't expect you girls to be doing this, and I certainly don't expect you, her daughter, to be doing this. Peers need to hear this because they're so pivotal on whether bullying is going to be allowed or even more cheered and reinforced. A man named Olweus, probably the most renowned expert in the world on bullying, a Norwegian, called the peer group around the bullying situation the bullying circle. And he identified in there that there are a few, very few, active perpetrators, kids who really enjoy bullying. But around that circle are a lot of kids who are henchmen or followers who also will join in and actively bully. And then around that, there are also more passive supporters. They may not do the bullying, but they're happy to see it occur, and they will say things like, do more, or got a way to go, to cheer on the bullying. And then there are some kids that won't say anything at all and are just sort of watching as onlookers. Some of them may like it a little bit, and others are very neutral. But on the other side of the circle, there are very, very few children that will be defenders, who would stand up and say something. There are some who are ready to be, and those are passive, and then there are some few courageous individuals, kind-hearted, who will step in and they'll say, I don't think that's the right thing. I can't be a friend of yours if you're going to treat other people that way. There are a few kind-hearted kids like that. When you have children like that, sometimes they set themselves up to be picked on too. So you can see it's a very difficult thing to do, to be able to stand in and discourage it. So kids, peer groups, need the adults, the parents, the school people, to set the expectations and say this is not allowed. The code of silence around bullying and harassment, which occurs, is very dangerous and allows the bullying to continue. That code has to be broken. And people have to be able to say, here we want to pledge ourselves to non-bullying. That's why we're now beginning to have comprehensive anti-bullying programs in schools where kids pledge to it, just like we did with substance abuse, with alcohol, to realize that this isn't just a normal expectation, sort of a myth to think that bullying is normal. It's supposed to go on. It isn't to go on.
Why has it taken so long? What has been the problem that adults have not come forward the way we think they should have come forward for all this time?
Well, it probably goes along with the theme of competition, especially in American schools, I would say. There has been a general push to have kids compete and do better than other people, so that our drive in terms of our ethic to accomplish and to be successful and to gain superiority is part of the tendency to feel like it's a survival culture. You know, you get by what you've done. Don't think that much about the other person. You want to get ahead. And so I think that what's happened is people have thought that bullying, you just learn to cope with it, that everybody is going to get their just desserts at some time. So if you really want to be successful and capable, you're going to learn to live with it, cope with adversity, and that this is part of growing up. If you intervene on bullying, you're babying, and you're allowing kids to, you know, get extra help that they shouldn't have. Maybe even people think it's not fair. So for a long time, educators, parents, I just allowed it to happen and figured, you know, it did when we grew up. Nobody said anything. Nobody did anything. And we're okay. Here we are. And, you know, only until recently have people started to say, you know, it's not right, because we see the damage that occurs by it. And we see that it's not just the victim that is harmed. It's also the bully. It's also the school, because other kids aren't feeling safe. And I think what has probably dramatized it so much were the violence incidents in Columbine and other schools. Almost always in these situations, when you looked at what was going on in the context and what the roots of the violence were, it was tremendous rage and hostility being generated from the children who were being ostracized, demeaned, essentially bullied. And it accumulated, it grew, it festered, and it finally exploded in the form of violence. And then people began to say, whoa, you know, this it cannot go on. This is, there's something very dangerous occurring in our schools, and we've got to take some action.
I worry a lot about the kids that are the ones that are standing around watching. The quieter ones that are watching, they're probably terrified that if they say anything or do anything wrong, they're going to land on that other spot where they're getting bullied. But they're not doing anything to help.
Right. I agree with that. But those are the ones that can be cultivated and brought in to a school norm which says it's brave to tell when somebody's being treated unfairly. Mm-hmm. You are doing a good service for our school if you let us know when bullying goes on. With the school setting forth the message that we know that bullying behavior is wrong, but we also know that people who are doing it need assistance to stop, that part of our education needs to be to help children who are inclined to bully to reduce it, to refrain from it, to learn other ways to be important, to learn other ways to speak to other people, that strength and toughness isn't coming from picking on people that are weaker and smaller than you.
Well, sometimes the ones that are being bullied come home and say, the kids took my ball, the kids took my jacket, I lost my notebook. Well, he didn't really lose his notebook. Somebody hid the notebook, that kind of thing. You kind of catch on when your child is being bullied. But then what if your child is the bully? How can you tell?
If your child is the bully, no one wants to know that. No one wants to hear that.
And he's not likely to come home and say, I beat up little Johnny today.
No, you're not going to be. Well, you know, that's an interesting aside from it, because there are some children whose family influence is strength and pride and physical strength, or even in psychological intimidation. And there are some bullies who might come home and say, you know, they won't say I did it with no reason. But they might say, so-and-so started this, and I wound up, you know. I let him have it. But I would distinguish the concept of a bully from bullying behavior. I think that's important when you say, what is a parent going to think, and how are they going to know that their child is a bully? It would be more helpful, and parents are much more able to accept, that their child might be demonstrating some bullying behaviors. Remember, there's a continuum of bullying. And I already said, there's very few children who are extreme bullies, but there are many who engage in bullying and who are drawn into it. So you want to know as a parent, is my child participating in bullying behaviors? Is my child engaging in behavior which puts other people down? Does my child cheer on people who fight and kind of draw close to kids who like power and like to dominate?
What kinds of signals should parents be watching for besides, obviously, the call from the teacher?
Well, even around the house and watching TV or movies or the way they play, is my child a kid who always wants to win at any cost? Does my child always feel like it's somebody else's fault and I don't have responsibility? Does a lot of blaming of other people? Is my child inclined to like violence and like the power that comes with beating somebody down? Is my child someone that has a lot of prejudices and finds the faults and the weaknesses in other people and points them out and even relishes that they're better or superior? And you can see as I'm saying these things that this means examining not just your child. It means asking yourself some questions.
Where does the child get those attitudes?
To what extent in my house do we sit around and do we cheer when somebody, you know, really beats up somebody else? You know, even if it's called patriotism, you know, in some cases. Do we like pointing out how some groups, minorities or people who are different, don't belong here and that they have less worth and that they shouldn't be treated in a respectful way? Do we value that? Do we like being one up and having more power than someone else? Do we say a lot that those people did this? Or do we blame easily when there are problems? Are we the good family that never does anything wrong and there are others that are always doing things wrong, finding fault with everybody? Those conditions are fertile ground for creation of bullying behavior, which their children might exhibit. So that's why you want to talk about bullying behavior, because parents may not see what's going on so clearly. They may be very interested in seeing less of it, and they would be more accepting and more willing to think about what they're doing if you said some of this behavior is getting a little unacceptable. We need to try to figure out ways together, the school and the family, to see if we can reduce it. Then the parents might do it. But if you just said, your kid is a bully, the first thing that's going to happen is they're going to say, don't you say that. That's not true.
What do you know?
What do you know? Yeah.
Dr. Fagan, how can we use our child's school to help change the bullying behavior without constant punishment?
Well, school is a very important place where the kids spend most of their time. And we have to think about three levels of help from the school. So we should think about if we're going to go to the school and seek help, we want to know what is the school doing in a general way throughout the school to approach bullying. My child may be doing bullying, and I'm sitting here in this house all by myself. I haven't done a survey of how much bullying is going on in the school. I've just heard that my child is doing it. If it's happening in this class and in that class and at fourth grade, at fifth grade, or in high school, at all the grade levels, if the teachers aren't really attending to it, if the school hasn't had any particular campaign on it or made it a priority, then you're going to have a difficult time independently reducing bullying, no matter what you do in your home, because so much of it may be supported by the peer group, like we saw in the car. So you want to know what is going on school-wide. That's the first level to look at. Then you want to know what's going on in my child's classroom, because every classroom is different within that general macro culture is the micro of the classroom. You want to know what's happening in this classroom. And what's the teacher saying? Is the teacher saying, like Myra, this is not the way we treat people in this classroom when she hears that going on? Or does she look the other way? Is the teacher doing anything to demonstrate appreciation for differences? Does she look at kids' strengths and weaknesses and say improvement is important in weaknesses, and it's not just A papers that are on the board, or not just the best kids that I'm enjoying. Is helping acceptable? Does she like to see different interests occur and cultivate the interests of the children and some of their uniqueness? So you want to know, what is the teacher's behavior that's going on in relation to mistreatment of children by other children? And then third, you want to be able to come up with some individual plan with the school for how we can help our own child. So you want to sit and you want to talk with them about, okay, we do want to cooperate with you, and I am upset about the bullying, and there are things I think we can do at home, and we'll work with you on it. That's the key, is to be able to work cooperatively, to see the parents now as a partner to you with the child, and to say to the child, too, we know you're doing this somewhat. I think you can cut some of this out. I think you can become a better person. We're going to work together on this. Because children generally, if they think the parents are approving the behavior and they're giving attention and love and caring for change, children want to do that. But they want to move with the parents towards the goal and with the school. So you need that triad, school, parent, child, together. And then the plan has to always have two parts to it. The bullying is the bad news. But if you ask yourself, what is there besides bullying? What replaces bullying? You have to start to identify, what do we want instead? What are the positive behaviors we want? If I want to be important and a big shot, I can do it by making you small and belittle you or hit you or whatever. But if I don't do that, how do I get important? And how do I be a big shot? So the school's plan has to say, provide opportunities for leadership so we can learn in other ways. Or teach me how to say how I feel about somebody without demeaning them. Can I say, you know, I don't really care for the dress that you're wearing today. How come you're not wearing something that's more like mine? And listen to what they have to say. You know, you can express feelings without, you know, belittling the other person. A plan may also have to include things like learning to be empathic. If you're sitting in a home and you're watching a TV program, we could look at the strength of somebody and how they're beating other people or how they're winning all the time. But we could also take a look at, how do you think the guy feels who tried so hard and only came in third? Or how do you think that person felt when the others, you know, went off and left them behind? Parents can make a choice on whether they want to develop empathy or they want to develop identification with power and strength and dominance. So these are some things that have to go in the plan. You want to be able to reinforce the good things that are alternatives to bullying, that people can feel self-pride in, gain confidence in doing it, and then you want to at the same time reduce the bullying.
It's a great example of how to use what's around us that our kids like.
All right, let me just also add that in addition to trying to build the positive, we have to be able to administer consequences when the bullying occurs. So we need to make sure that we do things like that are reasonable and fair, but that show the child that the behavior is unacceptable.
What kinds of consequences would you suggest?
Well, a big one would be apology. Even if it's after the fact, you bring the kids together and you have the one that did the unacceptable behavior apologize to the other. Or it could be a group, like that group that was in the butt, in the car, do an apology. Or make restitution. If they damage something or break something, it's up to them to repair it or replace it. So they have to correct what they did. They can also practice other ways to talk than what they did. And we call that corrective practice. Sometimes we have to withdraw privileges, and they lose points, or they don't get to watch TV, or they don't get to go on a trip, or they have to stay grounded, or they don't get to play with the people that maybe they followed along with who were undesirable. So the consequences have to be natural, they have to make sense, but they have to be there, and they have to be administered almost immediately.
Before we close, Dr. Fagan, are there any resources that you would suggest for our listeners who'd like to learn more about bullying and how to handle a bully?
Well, in addition to the resources that I identified the last time I was here when we talked about helping the victim, I would add some new ones that are also very effective, and maybe that can be combined with the ones previous. A very good website is called Bully Online, www.successunlimited.co.uk. It's a British one. The National Crime Prevention Council, www.ncpc.org, has a lot of good videos that would interest children at different age levels on the subject of bullying and how they can either help to prevent it or how they can themselves change from being bullies. There is a National Center for Violence Prevention, which also has videos. The phone number is 1-800-962-6662. The Bullying Prevention Handbook that's put out by the National Education Service is a nice addition. And a book called Good Friends Are Hard to Find by Perspective Publishing gives some nice ideas to parents on what they can do to help a child who is bullying. Some organizations that have more recently got into interventions for bullying, which are good organizations, the Educators for Social Responsibility, www.esrnational.org, an organization called Peace Builders, http://peacebuilders.com, and there's a wonderful project called the Giraffe Project, www.giraffe.org, which promotes service, student service. We didn't talk about that, but when I talked about finding desirable things, one of the best things you can do for a bully is help them to start helping other people. And if they start moving into anything that's helpful to others and their identity changes to that, the bullying goes. So those are really good references and resources. And in my opinion, an excellent book that I would look at as a parent would be The Bully Free Classroom by Free Spirit Publishing. Many, many ideas to help work with the bully.
Sounds like it's good for teachers as well.
It's excellent for teachers. Yeah.
Terrific. Well, you have been excellent for all of us. We all appreciate having you back to talk this time about dealing with our children as possible bullies or having bullying behavior. So we really appreciate your coming, Dr. Stanley Fagan.
Thank you very much for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show 184. Tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.